Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Ben and Bentaleblou of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing with his colleague Saeed Ghassemnejad recently in the Dispatch about protests in Iran. I recently came across this because I saw some videos made by mobile phones of a football match, soccer contest in Tabriz, northwest Iran, in which young people, young men, because they were all attending, thousands and thousands of them, in the colored t-shirts of their favorite hometown teams, were chanting for liberty and other phrases that are highly suggestive of protest of the regime. And I puzzled because I always understood the Basiji, the bully boys of the regime, had intimidated everyone, and that arrests were made in the middle of the night and torture and people were disappearing. But these young people took no effort to hide their faces. And in fact, the videos were being passed around on Twitter worldwide. Benham, has something happened? Has something changed? Are the Basiji different than they used to be? Or are they overwhelmed? You've written about protests across the country. Is what I saw in Tabriz commonplace?
I think increasingly you've seen, well, a couple of different points here, but one, broadly, you've seen this increased willingness, rather than to live within the tight guardrails socially, politically, economically imposed on Iranians by the government of the Islamic Republic of Iran, with all of its discrimination, with all of its repression. You've seen willingly over the past decade, but particularly over the past decade, a half decade, a willingness by the Iranian public to punch back. And they've punched back, taken to the streets, punched back through acts of defiance, punched back through different levels of strikes, labor strikes, some politically motivated, some economically motivated. But ultimately, that macro level layer of fear is increasingly being pushed away by these small acts of bravery, by those calls for liberty. And the Iranian public, regardless of ethno-sectarian background, has been more willing to go out onto the streets, not just in response to political issues, but particularly in response to seemingly non-political issues, social triggers, ethno-linguistic triggers, environmental triggers, and even security-related ones. You remember the downing of the Canadian airliner in early 2020, in the days after the U.S. drone strike against Qasem Soleimani. That Iranian downing of that civilian airliner triggered massive protests across Iran. The last summer, you had water protests beginning in Khuzestan, which is Iran's oil-rich but actually rather impoverished province, which is also home to Iran's Arab ethnic minority. That province, as well as the rest of Iran's southwest, was the main province driving protests in this current iteration of demonstrations against the Islamic Republic. And all this paints one picture. While the regime is trying to project strength through domestic repression and foreign aggression, ultimately these are signs of weakness. The regime has many cracks in it. It has many, many fears, whether it is the communications technology that could allow the Iranians to continue to get their stories out, whether they're taken on mobile phone or they're shared across the internet or elsewhere. The regime fears the united power of the street against the state.
In your article, you identify 6 drivers for these protests. The first 3 you've just encapsulated, which was the war in Ukraine, food security. This is region-wide, not just in Iran, but it's exacerbated by the second, a multi-year drought you mention in Iran, and the third, mismanagement. So the supply chain is broken, the skies are not filled with rain, and at the same time, the administration in Tehran, the Raisi government, is incapable of managing their economy because of the sanctions, or would it have been troubled anyway? Can we tell, Benham?
It's troubled anyway. The sanctions compound the long-standing issues related to mismanagement, corruption, graft, that exist in the Iranian government. You know, this is a kind of government that has a parliament speaker like Ghalibaf, whose family goes to Turkey, you know, to procure luxury goods while the nation is protesting and dealing with a massive subsidy reform crisis that even makes having subsidized wheat and flour-based products damn near impossible. And then that subsidy reform endeavor targets exchange rates that go after basic goods, cooking goods in Iranian household, which comes to things like cooking oil, dairy, eggs, and even poultry. So there is a long-standing cleavage between state and society. The macroeconomic pressure that you could chalk up to the maximum pressure campaign, sanctions Trump resurrected and imposed and enforced, and Biden has let atrophy, has exacerbated some of those. But even as the Iranians continue to come out and protest, they're not chanting against the sanctions. I think as Trump really ramped up those penalties in 2018, you had Iranians chant, "Our enemy is here. They lie when they say it's America." And you don't have a single chant today targeting these sanctions. You have these chants focusing on the reason why Iran is in the position that it is, which is the government of the Islamic Republic, and in particular, the leadership of the Supreme Leader, Ali Khamenei.
Raisi, the new president, a man who was identified with unacceptable behavior, a sadist from the 20th century, is he a source of the protests? Do they personalize the protests and chant against him as well?
He has been the target of some slogans, but the subsidy reform endeavor was really a joint venture, but really driven by the executive branch in Iran. And that's subsidy reform is difficult in even democratic countries. It's difficult in countries where there even is a modicum of the rule of law, which is a sharp contrast to what exists in the Islamic Republic, which violates its own perverse laws sometimes. So you have a government in Iran which is doing something that is even difficult for competent governments to do. So it's a sign that they think they can control the reaction. And the Raisi government, given who is at the helm of that, Ebrahim Raisi himself, have shown no compunction, no qualm about using brute force, just as these individuals in their past have had bloodstained past, to use this brute force against the population to get them in line. And it does dovetail and tie into the larger nuclear issue here, because neither Raisi nor Khamenei want to have to show to their own elites, as well as to the population, that they are going to have to be reliant on foreign, read Western sanctions relief. And so they're trying to do everything to keep the ship afloat, whether that's continued illicit oil sales to China or these changes to the already faltering macroeconomy of Iran, just to say that they can keep the ship afloat.
In 2009, the street protests in Tehran, my understanding was the besiegees throttled them and intimidated everybody, made mass arrests. People disappeared in the night. People were tortured. They didn't know where the bodies of their children were. Has the besiegee lost that power to terrorize the Iranian peoples?
I think the besiege, as well as the law enforcement forces, as well as the special units of the law enforcement forces, as well as the semi-official vigilante groups like Ansar Hezbollah, have had excess capabilities poured onto them in terms of funding, personnel capability in that ensuing decade. But what has happened, and many policymakers and even some Iran watchers actually have taken their eye off the ball on, is between 2009 and 2017, in that ensuing near decade, there's been a bunch of labor and different protest movements that have basically been laying down the groundwork for this new wave of not pro-reform, but directly anti-regime protests. They're not tied to any particular faction. And this is the one thing Washington audiences need to know, that the Islamic, that the Iranian people who live under the sword of the Islamic Republic, despite this growing military capability allied against them, have been protesting more and are going to continue to be protesting more. This is the biggest thing to take away, that they have risked and will continue to risk life and limb. And this is something Washington needs to take note of. It's not something that can be ignored, because despite this growing capability arrayed against them, they are continuing to protest.
We have a minute. Are the prisons full? Are the hangings continuing? The persecution of young people, is that the same as it ever was, or has there been a change in weather?
unfortunately, there's been a change, at least in reported executions. It's been growing. You know, the Islamic Republic is involved in a whole host of nefarious activities, whether it's, you know, tacit involvement, even the drug problem. You know, there's reports recently about it's the pro-Iran militias that occupy the heartland of the Middle East are also involved in the smuggling of certain kinds of drugs that tend to do very well in terms of the sale and supply transfer that comes out of the Persian Gulf region. You know, this is really a government that has failed its own people for as long as it's been around, and you can count that on every vector. So whether it's prisons, the broken judicial system, as well as executions and gross crimes against humanity like that, those signs have only gone up, meaning the situation has only gotten worse, not better, in the Islamic Republic.
Bannon Bentaleblou, a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, reporting on the darkness visible of the predatory state of the Islamic Republic. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,